my special guest today is the 2015 Australian of the Year, Rosie Batty. Rosie, thank you for your time. I know you're incredibly busy, so we appreciate you coming along and having a chat with us.
Thanks, Kate.
You spoke, I think, back in June to the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners.
Yes.
Why did you want to do that, and what was your message for them?
Well, I think it's really important that the medical profession, who are at the front line and quite often may well be the first people that victims actually visit, that they are as aware of the problem as the rest of the community. Mm-hmm. In fact, even more importantly so. And I feel that most professions have limited knowledge and understanding, one, of the prevalence of this issue, two, of how what to do with it, and three, have the same myths and misconceptions that a lot of the general community have that are very ingrained in our society and, you know, haven't been debated and discussed openly before. So I feel that engaging with the medical sector, who are pivotal, is really important.
How important is that very first contact in terms of how the doctor responds?
Well, I think, you know, it's a case of sometimes it's the right time to actually ask the question and not be afraid of asking the question, are you in a violent relationship? The person may be so confused that they actually don't know that they are.
Right.
Sometimes, or they may not be ready. They may be too frightened, or it may be the right time. But certainly having a compassionate, empathetic manner could be the difference between somebody coming back,
yes,
and feeling comfortable in coming back and at a time that's right for them to tell you,
yeah.
Or when you start to have regular visits and you might start to feel that there is more to what's happening than meets the eye.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, with my journey, it's not that I expected to tell the doctor everything, but I did know to go to them for a mental health plan.
Right.
I would know to go to them for various reasons. It was symptomatic of, you know, anxiety or depression, you know, not just physical injury or,
yeah,
you know, probably more likely to be all those other contributing factors. So I think that it's sometimes not what's not said.
Yes.
That and to recognise that, you know, it may not be the right time or the right environment or the right place, but you are one of many opportunities. And if, as the victim becomes more, senses more danger or more reason to be concerned about her safety,
yeah,
certainly there is that opportunity to start to think of those caring people who she could trust.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the process.
Now, both the college and the Australian Medical Association have put out guidelines for doctors about family violence. Have you been otherwise happy with their responses and how doctors are reacting to your messages?
Well, I think that certainly doctors have an enormous demand on their time.
Yeah.
You know, it's fair to say that family violence is only one of the many things that they come across. But what I would say that family violence is likely to underpin a lot of the other issues.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of people are starting to realise, that, you know, drug and alcohol abuse, mental illness, you know, they you know, as you are, you know, dealing with these other factors or even contributors, that there is potentially a lot of the case, there is, you know, underpinned by family violence. And certainly you've also got the complexity of perhaps the perpetrator and how, again, you engage with,
yeah,
with somebody that's quite a difficult process. And so I think there's a lot to be involved. And certainly the most important thing for me to convey is that, you know, like everything else, you're not a specialist in this space.
Yeah.
You're a referral point.
Yep.
So what I feel is really important is that we have a very clear understanding of what the practice, how the practice responds to victims of violence or perpetrators,
gosh,
in their medical practice, because you are not an expert. And also what is most important is the safety of the victim. And so without being specialist service, you cannot possibly have an understanding of their safety and their risk. And it isn't necessarily the right approach to ring 000 and involve the police. Yes. So what is that step? And I think that, you know, that's where having a very good understanding that, you know, who are you referring to? Who are the specialised services in your immediate area that you would refer to? Or do you keep it very simple? And, you know, 1-800-RESPECT is a number to convey to everybody who does refer them to the correct services. I would love to see, and I'm hoping to work into the future with, information that is available in practices.
Yes.
That's been something I've really wanted to see, and I think it can be a very, a very key way to introduce the topic to somebody who may not be ready to acknowledge the position they're in. Pamphlets about describing violence. Pamphlets that actually, you know, while you're waiting in a doctor's surgery, sometimes you have to wait quite a long time. So I think that, you know, whilst we're waiting, we look around for things to read. And I think the doctor's surgery is a key place for information. So what is violence? What are the different forms of violence? What can you do? And what can you do to support someone?
So perhaps this isn't just about educating the doctors, but educating reception staff, nurses.
Yeah. It's a whole of community approach. And so basically, again, it certainly is. And, you know, and I think while we have notice boards in practices to, you know, to again convey that this is actually a practice that, you know, is there to support and victims of family violence. Mm. So I think that, you know, those are the things that I would like to see as part of my campaigning, introduce as well into doctor practices, so that we can kind of feel that it's a subject that we can feel comfortable in broaching to our doctor about, but the doctors in that surge in that practice do need to be confident and knowledgeable about how to respond to victims.
Did your doctors let you down?
No, I think they were very supportive. They're, you know, I look back and there are things that if every organisation had been able to join red flags, but we don't have crystal balls. And my doctor was concerned for my safety, and we did talk about that. But ultimately, you know, it's the police's job to keep, you know, to intervene when issues of safety.
Yeah.
There is only so much any organisation can do. I think the doctor's response is really to refer them correctly.
Right.
And to refer them correctly is to do that, to introduce them into a specialised service who can advocate and take them to the police, who can assess their level of risk, who can perhaps take them out of danger and place them into a refuge, or support the decisions they are ready, able to make because they understand the resistance and fear. Now, when you are a victim, you know, you have a lot of advice and a lot of people telling you what you should and shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
So to speak to somebody who has that specialisation is really validating and can be empowering. But certainly it's really important that, you know, to acknowledge that sometimes it places by disclosing, by going to the police, by going through the court process, escalates the violence.
Yeah.
So it isn't something that we should be necessarily forcing people to do because we believe that's the best option for them.
Just about every state in the country requires doctors to report child abuse, but only the Northern Territory mandates reporting of abuse of adults. Do you think mandatory reporting is a dangerous move for doctors? As you were saying, sometimes it can escalate the problem.
Yeah, I'm a bit hesitant to recommend that.
Yeah.
I do think there is a lot of intricacies there, and I don't know that, you know, and we've also got to have the infrastructure to be able to support that.
Yeah.
We don't, you know, right now, the journey of a victim, it leaves a lot to be desired, a lot. And similarly, the same for children. We may report, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're believed. It doesn't actually necessarily mean that their life is improved from that point.
Yeah,
so, you know, what we've got to do is understand that if you were forced, if people were perhaps knew that they would be forced to have their, you know, to be reported, it would certainly make a difference to me whether I spoke about it or not. Because I do think that takes away that trust and confidentiality, because it all of a sudden means you've confided or shared something with somebody that, and then it's taken out of your hands. Yeah. So I actually have to say that I do have concerns, that there may be very well unintended ramifications from that.
Yeah.
I think what is particularly more important is that doctors are better trained. They don't have to, and to understand they don't need to be experts, but yeah, they do need to know how to refer properly, why it is important to link a woman in and her children is because of the level of risk, is for the support that they may need, and the fear that they may, you know, of what may happen if they escalate the problem. And so that journey needs to be supported by people who don't judge or criticise or push or, you know, give, unintended advice that really is unhelpful. So I think, you know, what I would like to see is I have had great interest from medical students.
Have you had a chance to talk to medical schools?
I spoke to Flinders Medical School.
Right.
They requested when I was in Adelaide last couple of weeks ago. Sure. So that was a student initiative. It was very powerful, and I was really, it was really powerful. It was really inspiring to me to realise that younger medical students actually want to understand the social issues behind the symptoms. It's not just about being a doctor and recognizing, you know, measles or and things like this. It's about what is, you know, what's happening socially, and what are the, you know, the cult communities within the areas of the doctors practicing in, and understanding different culture. And they're wanting to learn more about the people.
Do you feel like there's a bit of a perfect storm brewing, that this time something might actually change culturally and socially?
Yes.
Obviously the tragedy of Luke's death has sparked something. You've continued to fan those sparks. It feels to me, just watching, that things are about to move in a big way.
Yes, I think so, because I certainly see that, you know, it's about everybody recognising the issue. And I know that a lot of people say, well, there's not one in three women that I see that are affected.
Mm.
Well, perhaps that's because you're not looking or asking the right questions.
Yeah, exactly.
Perhaps, and this is where I find that most of us in society, and if you haven't been impacted by the problem, or haven't, you know, have really not really been challenged by the prevalence of the issue, don't really see it's something you need to really concern yourself about or learn more about. So I'm hoping that has changed. And certainly we all have a long way to go. Every profession does. But I think, I would like to think that with the colleges, just like every college, whether it's teacher training, whether it's, you know, medical practice, if we're able to really unpack a lot of the myths, the misconceptions surrounding family violence, and treat it as it should be treated, as violence, as, you know, totally unacceptable, then it will go a long way towards the victim being able to feel that they can not just speak out, but they can actually feel supported by a community that in the past has condemned them. And they feel made to wear the shame. Certainly, we're starting to have our eyes open and think, well, how can it be that we have allowed, by our ambivalence, that a victim of family violence can be disbelieved, discredited, her children turned against her, and the perpetrator continues to hold a high-profile position or a position of influence and power, and remain in the community without anyone really challenging his behaviour. I mean, when we look at it now and start to really look at it, we hopefully are starting to see that this is grossly not fair.
Yeah.
Not just not fair, it's
criminal.
It's criminal. And how come we've not recognised it as such before now?
Yeah.
We've still got a bit of a way to go. We've got some dinosaurs in our communities who I think will always be resistant to being able to see change.
Yeah.
And the, you know, that sense of privilege and entitlement that exists, and certainly I would go as far as to say in the medical sector, I'm fairly sure that that would be quite a challenge. But in the meantime, you know, what we have got to do is, you know, there's a lot of people who are very, very vulnerable, very, very unsafe and going through hell right now.
Yeah.
And there is nothing much that can happen in the short term for these people.
Yeah.
So it's imperative to me that, you know, if I've been able to fuel, you know, the fire, so to speak, that we, this tsunami of change that needs to happen can has gained some speed, because it is really unfair and unjust for some of these families to be exposed to really terrorism in their own homes, terrorism in their own neighbourhood.
Yeah.
And we've got to recognise it as such and treat it with the same degree of abhorrence and strong response as we do every other form of
and
violence and terrorism.
Doctors
have to play their part.
Rosie, thank you for everything you're doing.
It's a pleasure, Kate.
And thank you for your time today.
Thank you.